This is improvisation for a musician who is skilled on their instrument, but just not as familiar with improvisation, which does happen. Like, for example, classical musicians are never really, they're never really given an opportunity to explore improvisation. They can play all kinds of stuff, but they typically are less comfortable with improv. So we're going to start with an overview of improvisation, the four ingredients. Four ingredients are technique, music theory, phrasing, and ear training. And each of those has to be developed. And for the guitarist, let's start with technique. Technique doesn't necessarily mean, I mean, for someone like you, you already can play, you know, very well and play all kinds of complicated pieces. So we're not just talking general guitar technique, but let's do technique specific to improvisation. There's the three biggest ones are bends, slides, vibrato. Well, actually, let's say the four biggest ones would be legato, bends, slides, and vibrato. And we should talk about each one. We happen to be in the key of A, and the groove is just A7 and D7, and it's... Is it two bars each?
Yeah.
So swing, medium swing, two bars each, A7 and D7. And so, let's talk about legato. Like, it's a very easy way to play... these are eighth note triplets. Like... You know, on it's like putting a triplet on each beat. Since you chose a swing meter, if it was a straight meter, we might be doing 16th notes. But for now, we'll do sort of 12 notes per bar instead of 16, if you see what I mean. So, like, use hammer-ons and pull-ups, so you don't have to slave over picking or doing fingerstyle on every single one of those. So let's just hear it. Like, one, two, three, four, like...
pretty slow, I think.
All right, good. I'm glad you brought that up. I shouldn't have made an assumption that...
I can play fast. I got to practice.
That's fine. That's fine. But actually, it's good to find your most comfortable tempo, and we'll gear our backing track to it.
And so what exactly am I doing?
And it's funny. Like I'm not giving you much direction there. It's whatever, however you can grab... Like, it could be across two strings. In which case, you have to pick the first one. You have to pick every time you go to a new string.
Yeah.
So, in your case, if three notes are covering two strings, you'd have to pick, then pull off, and then pick.
Okay.
Whereas if you're ascending, it might be pick, hammer, and then pick on two strings. Yeah. So, any combination of those. It could be on the same string, like, or...
Okay, because I'm used to... I'm doing triplets. I'll pick the first note.
That'd be fine. You mean you're hammering the third
hammer
note?
Hammer on to the...
That'd be fine, too. But just you got to make sure you get it at the right volume.
Yeah.
Like, let's hear that first... Like, it's almost there. That third note's a little weaker than the others.
Yeah.
So what do you do about that? It's something to work on. You just... One thing is you can just work on picking lighter so that... The hammer and pull-off volumes don't have to equal it, so you don't have to work so hard to equal it.
Yeah.
So just lighten up your touch a little, and it's virtually effortless. But just mess around with that. Like, what would be a good speed for triplets for you? So let's assume it's like that, and I'll just do my vamp accordingly.
Are you going starting at the top and then triple it back up?
It's whatever you want. This is improvised. That's why I didn't want to be too prescriptive.
Okay, I could do this.
And you don't have to play continuous triplets either. You can just play. Combination of eighth notes and triplets, like two, three, four. Nice. Now I might not give you much time today to practice and implement each one, but you can certainly listen to this recording and take your own notes and then practice each thing. So yeah, we won't spend time implementing that, but that's a great thing. Actually, I just did a 16th note triplet there. Like eventually you'll get to that speed too. But it's smart that you determined your maximum speed and we adjusted the backing track to it.
Yeah.
Right? Don't slave over. And then even better would be to physically track how fast is that on the metronome, mm-hmm. and can I get it up 5 ticks this next week?
Yeah.
You know this. I'm just saying it out loud. So that's legato. But that, and then there's bends and vibrato and slides. Let's do slides first. Slides is... you just... determine any note you're going to slide into, and the slide could be, this is the summary of slides. Slides could be from near or far, or it could be slow or fast, like, or, and it could be from up or down, like. So any of those combinations of up, down, slow, fast, near, far gives you a ton of slide possibilities. Just mess around with slides for a minute. We'll play together, I guess. Expression, doesn't it? So, but that I'm condensing down. We could easily do a whole hour on slides, you know, just exploring all the different types of slides. There's, you know, there's like doubles where you can, like, it's called backslides. You slide back to the note that you started on, you know, all kinds of stuff like that, you know. So, but this is just an overview, so we're gonna move on. The bending technique. You have to know which bends are good to bend and how far to bend them. So there's an ear training component within this. Like the typical bends are on the top strings because it's no fun bending lower strings. The typical bends are on the right side of each fingering because it's no fun bending with just finger one when you can have finger three plus one and two behind it. And the typical bends are whole step bends. So if you know the formula for the minor pentatonic, it goes 1, flat 3, 4, 5, flat 7, 1. You heard this? So between 1 and flat 3 is a bit far, but between flat 3 and 4, that's a whole step bend. Between 4 and 5 is a whole step bend. And between flat 7 and 8 is a whole step bend. So if you put all that together, I'm going to give you a sheet that outlines the best bend notes. Again, right side of the fingering, upper strings, whole step to the next note. So if I play a 4, for example, like that's the do, re, mi, fa, the 4th note of the scale, and I know that it's a whole step to the 5th, and it's good for me to get the sound of that 5th in my ear before I bend there. Now, then I know what I'm after, like, and I can just go right to it. Mess around with that for a minute. Good, that's good. You're using your ear to bend exactly to the... You can always tell like a inexperienced bender when they bend the wrong notes, like they'll go... Like it's like that note. You're in the key of A and they'll go... Like they have no idea what pitch they're even going for. And plus bending a 1, what are you going to do? Bend it to like flat 1? Or I mean a sharp 1? Or maybe go up to 2. That'll sound okay. But it's not that common. Alright, I'm digressing. The next thing is the vibrato. You have your own style of vibrato from classical guitar, which is, you call it finger vibrato?
No, just call it vibrato.
You just call it vibrato? So, not that.
It's like a cellist's vibrato.
So I call that finger vibrato. I don't know if that's universally called that. Just to distinguish it between another type of vibrato, which comes from like more. There's more leverage, and it's not necessarily better because it's just artistically different. And you're your own artist. You make artistic choices, but this type of vibrato is wider. And like wider and deeper and potentially more expressive. So in a way, I am trying to make a case that it's better. But and how you do it is, you have the side of the first finger next to the big knuckle, not where the knuckle is, but on the side of the finger next to the first big knuckle. You put it up against the wood, and you use that as a lever, like you rotate your hand like a doorknob around that lever, and then you. Yeah, you're already making
it's like,
it.
BB King like vibrato.
Yeah, absolutely, totally different from what I call finger vibrato.
It's basically a bend back and forth, man.
It's a small bend, yeah. Yeah, and then it's. So to work that out for yourself, like take a pentatonic scale and give a nice, and I'm doing this on acoustic, so, you know, you can bend everything. Yes, dig that, dig the sound of that.
What do you do on the first string?
I bend up and then let it come back down. On the other ones, I tend to bend down. You have that leverage point, again, I'm putting it against here, and I'm not as good at it. You're right, it's a little harder, but you could still get a vibrato there. Good. See, that's a workout right there. We don't have time to go into more of that, but those are the big four: legato, slides, bends, and vibrato. That all is under technique. And then there's, you know, picking technique. There's, like, alternate picking, as you know. There's, there's other types of picking techniques. There's economy picking and alternate, what do you call it? Hybrid picking and sweep picking. Hybrid picking is where you use picking fingers. You can get like string skips and things that you, as you know, faster than you could do otherwise, but that's all more advanced stuff. But that all falls under technique. So that's category number one. Category number two is, let's do the music theory part.
Okay.
This is just for simplicity's sake, scales, and knowing which scales to use when. Right now we're just doing minor pentatonics. But there's also major pentatonics. Let me just run through some possibilities. You can't learn all these in one day, but you can at least know what they are and learn them as you go. You got minor pentatonics, 1, flat 3, 4, 5, flat 7, 1. You got major pentatonics, 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 1. You got the blues scale, which adds the flat 5 to the minor pentatonic. 1, flat 3, 4, flat 5, 5, flat 7, 1. Then you have the major scale, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1. You have the minor scale, 1, 2, flat 3, 4, 5, flat 6, flat 7, 1. You have all the modes of the major scales. Can you really use them in improvisation? Absolutely you do. Modes would be, you know, Dorian, 1, 2, flat 3, 4, 5, flat 6, sorry, 1, 2, flat 3, 4, 5, natural 6, flat 7, 1. Phrygian 1, flat 2, flat 3, 4, 5, flat 6, flat 7, 1. Lydian 1, 2, 3, sharp 4, 5, 6, 7, 1. Mixolydian 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, flat 7, 1. And we already did Aeolian because I demonstrated that in the minor scale. And then Locrian is 1, flat 2, flat 3, 4, flat 5, flat 6, flat 7, 1. So those are all stuff to learn. And then you have a harmonic minor, 1, 2, flat 3, 4, 5, flat 6, natural 7, 1. And you have melodic minor, 1, 2, flat 3, 4, 5, natural 6, natural 7, 1. Again, in jazz and non-classical music, we don't worry about ascending one way and descending another. It's just all melodic minor, ascending or descending when you're in jazz. So it's just a different thing. And when to use all those, like, how are you going to begin to, your music theory is pretty strong, but for someone listening, actually my Four Music Geeks Only package, there's a component of that. It's 82 common and exotic modes with the scale fingerings and the theory and the backing tracks and performance tracks and everything else. And there's a thing in that, what scales to play over what chords. And there's a huge, all 82 are organized. Like, so when it says major 7, you know, major 7 chord, and then it'll have major scale, it'll have Dorian, Lydian, it'll have, augmented, that's not true. Augmented will have plus 5. So that may be in a different category. I don't remember how I organized it all, but if it's, there's all these other scales that you can play over a major 7 chord, that document will help keep that straight. So that all goes under music theory. And yes, there's fretboard theory that's tied to that. You have to know how, like, where to play them, what the fingerings would be for all that. But any questions on all that giant amount of information I just glossed over?
Not really.
I stand corrected. This is a public video that I made. It says what scale to play over what chords, the ultimate guide. And then let's just listen to this for a second. Oh, okay, so here's major chords, major scale, major pentatonic, Lydian, harmonic minor. That's harmonic major, excuse me. That's augmented. That's the double harmonic major. Lydian sharp 2. You can go nuts with this stuff. I mean, technically, you know, that scale has a 1, 3, 5, and 7, so you can use it. Ionian sharp 2. This is funny. I think I'm getting more entertained by this than the actual educational value of presenting it to you right now. There it is. Public video. And, alright, moving on to the next part, which is, let's do phrasing next, and we'll save ear training for last. Phrasing, we did some stuff already with 2-bar, like, the most common phrase length is 2 bars. So if you have, let's go back to our example of, it's good that the chords here change every 2 bars, because then it's easy to keep track of managing 2-bar phrases. It's like one phrase per chord. So managing 2-bar phrase might sound like 1, 2, 3, 1. And then next chord. Then next chord. Next chord. And if all you do is keep your 2-bar phrases clear and clean, that takes you a long way to being clear in your improvisation. Like, just listen to no chords and no accompaniment and no narration on my part. Like 1, 2, 3, 4. I did nothing else besides play 2-bar phrases. I didn't go any further into phrase congruency, which we'll talk about. or call and response and all this stuff we'll talk about. I only played clear two-bar phrases of varying lengths within the two bars, mm-hmm. and it still sounded like more than just notes. There's some storytelling that is innate in that. Am I right mm-hmm. about that? So that's a big thing, like getting used to two-bar phrases. Should we spend some time on that? We're gonna record you a little bit. One, two, three. You did some stuff where you repeated the rhythm exactly. That's really good. But even when you didn't do that, it still sounded compelling. In other words, there were times where you went 2, 3, 4. I mean, it doesn't matter. I'm not trying to imitate what you played, but I'm illustrating the principle of it. You repeated the two-bar rhythm exactly in the next phrase, and it sounded very compelling. Then there were other times where there was no relationship between the two phrases, but the simple fact that you were doing clear two-bar phrases made it musical like this. 2, 3, 1. Like those two phrases had nothing to do with each other, but they were still clearly two bars each. And so that was good. So let's go more into the repetition part of it, the rhythmic repetition part of it. If you repeat the same rhythm and vary the ending of that rhythm, now you have a call and response type of format where it might be like 1, 2, 3. So could you hear that the rhythm was the same in the beginning, but the ending part varied it a little bit? Mm-hmm. And it added to the storytelling aspect of the improvisation, right?
Yeah.
All right, you try it. So mimic most of the rhythm, but vary the ending. If you want to repeat the exact same notes, you may do that too.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3. Right there, you play ga 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 2, 3, 4, and then ga 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 ga, right?
Yeah.
Which is great, and then you extended the ending to like spill over into the next phrase, which isn't wrong. It's not wrong, but then you were unclear where the two-bar phrase should start and end.
Yeah.
So and in real life, that's going to happen, and it's actually a good thing to be organic. But you'll be in control. You'll know it would have spilled over into the next phrase. So for now, be disciplined on where those two, on every phrase being two bars long only, even if it's call and response. So you have 2, 3, 4, 1. Then a response. Now a new one. Now a variation. You're always in control of where those two bars are. Here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4. I love it. I thoughts about that so far? Like,
I can feel the two-bar phrase pretty clearly now, but it's still trying to fit ideas on, get ideas out of my head in time. And got a lot of different things to play around with, and it's almost like too much right now. I gotta practice some things to make it actually kind of come second nature a little bit more.
All right, good. Actually, sometimes the restrictive, did you know this? Like, sometimes adding a restrictive component feeds the creativity because it limits you from all these enormous possibilities. So restricting your creativity can be good. And within the two bars, you might experiment with, here's just an idea for you, leaving the front half spacious or leaving the back half spacious. Probably the back half spacious is easier to get into. So, like, for example, if we do 1, 2, 3, then 3, 4, and then, like, I'm leaving the front half is more dense with notes. But you could also do it on the back half, like on the front half to be dense, to be sparse, my bad. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, when you start playing around with the parameters of a two-bar phrasers, and you do eighth notes, there's 16 possible start and end points within that. It's a lot of creativity in there. Mm-hmm. And actually, I was doing, was that 16? No, it was triplets. One and a da 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 da. So there's 12 notes per bar and 24 possibilities of where start and end. That's a lot of possibilities. And that's all within phrasing. This is only one aspect of phrasing. Another aspect of phrasing is just varying the rhythms in general. Like, forget about two-bar phrases for right now. Well, actually, no. I want to back up. While we're on the two-bar phrase, let's talk about phrase congruency. Phrase congruency just means that any phrase, the second phrase, will have something in common with the first phrase, doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's obvious. It can be a melodic shape, it could be a technique, it could be a rhythm. The rhythm is probably the most easiest thing, like 2, 3, 4. 2, 3, 4. And then a new one. Had rhythmic elements in common. It doesn't necessarily mean that the whole phrase is rhythmically the same. It could just mean there's some element in the phrase that's rhythmically related, like 2, 3, 4. Whether it's slow notes or fast notes, that had some rhythmic thing in common. And in that last phrase, I deliberately put it in different places within the bar. So the rhythm itself wasn't the same from two bars to two bars, but that one element unified both. So as long as you have a unifying thing could be a technique. Like, let's say it's a bend. 2, 3, 4. Slides that had it in common. There's some element that unites. There's a huge array of those, and it's some. Each one of these subjects can be a whole hour. But again, this is just your big picture overview. Phrase congruency is a very fun thing. It's often overlooked. People just you tend to, you know, play notes, 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 and there's no storyline there. But the storyline, the thread of a story doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be super obvious. You can have new sentences that go in a completely new direction, but as long as they somehow relate to what came before. Now we can move on to the other part of phrasing, which is just having a variety of rhythms. As you know, in this context, like you could play like whole notes, like let's have you do it. I'm gonna call out what you should play. So play whole notes 2, 3, 4. Good. Now let's do half notes. Quarters. Can you do just a question? You did 1, 2, and 4 bars. Sorry, 1, 2, and 4 notes per bar. Can you do 3 notes in 1 bar? Just curious.
It depends on the rhythm, but
like on the same thing, like 1, 2, 3, 4. So you'd have to put 3 notes over those 4 beats.
You want to do 3/4, like 3/4. Evenly?
Yeah, I just want to see if you can do it. Ah, nice! Nice! Nice job, nice job. How'd you get there? What'd you think?
I tried to do... I was thinking 4 and...
Yeah, you gotta do that.
Feeling 3 over top.
That's good. That's how you do it.
I feel 3 in my body and I think 4.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. He said it right. So just for the purposes of anyone listening, this is just a side note thing. Well done. That's one of the hardest rhythms. You got it. He was thinking... like the grouping is 1 and a 2 and a 3 and a 4 and a 1 and a 2. And that's 12 in a bar. If you group them in 4s, it's... And if you hit just the first of those, you have... Well, let me do it. 1, 2, 3, 4. I don't know if I can play the rhythm and say that thing. No, you do it. 2, 3. Yeah, he's like that. So it's a different way of grouping. Okay, good. So we got... So far we got... 1 note per bar, 2 notes, 3 notes, 4 notes. Let's go to 6 notes per bar. 6 notes is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4. I like to say it like that because if people don't read music, then they're not going to know what like a dotted 8th note is and all this stuff. So I just do it like that. And then let's do 8 notes in a bar. 2, 3, 4. Yeah, you got it, because it would be, even though it's a swing feel, you'd be doing... Good. Good. And then 12 notes in a bar would be... You might need hammer-ons and pull-offs to execute that. It would be like 1, and a 2, and a 3, and a 4, and a 1, and a 2, and a 3, and a 4, and a 1, and a 2, and a 3. Good, great. Just to point out, like, if you're practicing something like that, it doesn't mean you have to play continuous 16th notes when you're improvising, but just little bits of them will be enough. Like, if you play... Sorry, this is triplets. Let me go into a straight feel so I can get 16th notes. Like 1 in the end, a 2 in the end. Like I'll go into a straight feel rep versus a swing feel. Like those are just small amounts of 16th notes. Yeah. Okay. on to 24 notes or 32 notes per bar, but you know, at some point it starts getting crazy. But that's a lot of rhythmic opportunity for creativity. It's a huge, again, every single one of these lessons is like, could be hours of fun. And so, but think about if you have just 1, 2, 3, let me just put the metronome on. If you just mix up the rhythms and do nothing else, there's no phrase congruency, there's no technique, and all you do is mix up the rhythms. This happens to be about 100 that we were just at. So, that's all I did was mix up the rhythms. It could be a huge thing. It's called the Table of Time. I have a big video on that too, like the Table of Time, where you deliberately make yourself switch. Here, let's just do it for a second. Like, we're gonna do one bar of, I'm gonna do it with me if you wish, but I'm gonna do one bar of one note, two notes, three notes, four notes, six notes, eight notes, 12 notes, and 16 notes. All in a row. Two, like, one, two, three, one, so. Like that, that's how it all went. That's not easy.
No.
And my teacher used to, when I used to take lessons with this drummer guy, I used to have to go back and forth and weave in the odd ones too. Like, we skipped over, you know, we skipped over 5 and 7, and I used to be able to do that. And now it's, I'd have to work it out again. But like 9 notes per bar, I used to know how to do that. even 11 notes, I used to do weird stuff like that, 11 notes per bar. Now I'm digressing. But it's just fun. Like, yeah, you play, let's see, 11 notes per bar would be just slower than 12. 12 is da ga da da ga da da ga da da ga da da ga da. So 11 notes would be da di ke na ka ta ki da ta ki da da di ke na ka ta ki da ta ki da da di ke na ka ta ki da ta ki da ta. It wasn't perfect, but you could see how it could get there. But I'm totally digressing. But having fun with rhythmic variation is a huge thing. Now we're down to the last thing, which is the ear training. This is harder to teach because there's so many different varieties. But if you have a song that, if you have a song for each interval, like every time I hear a perfect fifth, I think of Star Wars. Like, nothing but Star Wars. And I can, you know. And I know that that's a fifth. When I hear a flat fifth, it's the Simpsons. Like, you know, so if you have a song memorized for each one, I have a video on this too. Then whatever your lick is, if your idea in your head is, then I hear the flat five going to four. Now here comes a bride, and then going to flat three, which is the smoke on the water. Gun, gun, gun. So I hear flat five, four, flat three, one, and I know where it is on the fretboard, and I can easily find it anywhere on the neck. I could find it, or etc. Like, you're training in. And music theory and fretboard theory, you know, they all collide together, but you have to train your ear. So the best way to do it is, like, maybe start simple with nursery rhyme. Let's test you for a minute. Nursery rhyme. they're all, it's all going to be major scale, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And so, if I give you the key of A, and I ask you to play, da-da-dee-da-dee-da, just that, the first lines of Happy Birthday, see if you can find it. So again, you're in the key A, and the melody is da-da-dee-da-dee-da. So I see you found the first note already, which is a good thing. Yeah, you found it. So you found it in the end. There was a lot of what I call hunting and pecking going on.
Yeah.
And developing your ear is, in a way, just having the patience to not hunt and peck and to force your ear to come up with it. Like, you could practice this in the car, just don't miss your exit. Like, okay, my tonic is one, so I'm going to just do it all by ear. So one, two, three, four, five. So one, which you found, but it took a second, and then from there you weren't sure how, like, what to do with that. So if you do it all by ear, your ear could decode 5 5 6 5 1 7 5 5 6 5 2 1 5 5 5 3 1 7 6. I think I'm right. 4 4 3 1 2 1, and then 5 5 6 5 1 7 5 5 6 5 2 1 5 5 5 3 1. That was a part I wasn't sure about. 7 6 4 4 3 1 2 1. And so most people don't take the time to do the interim step of writing down the pitches before they go to the guitar, you know. And that's what I mean. You could do it in the car, but don't miss your exit. And of course, you probably don't have a chance to write something down either. But like, do another one for me. This is, it just illustrates how you might practice ear training. You start with simple stuff like kids songs, nursery rhymes, where you know that it's going to be of the major scale. And that's another thing too, like, if you're going to hunt and peck, at least hunt and peck within the scale. Like I told you, it was in the key of A, and we're making an assumption that it's in A major. So all the notes are going to, there's nothing going to be the outside of that. So if you are going to hunt and peck, at least use the scale over it. But if you would, give me a nursery rhyme.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star.
So immediately, like, because we're going to do it in the key of A, same key, you have to kind of hear, whether you vocalize that loud or just hear it in your inner ear, it's 1 1 5 5 6 6 5 4 4 3 3 2 2 1, like that. Now play it, now that I just told you it, 5 1 1 5 5 6 6 5 4 4 3 3 2. So that happens to be an easy one.
Yeah.
And that's how you gradually start expanding. Okay, now do, you know, now do a rock tune, like do, I don't know, but just the ocean came to my head, and I know what the intervals are already, so I'm cheating, because I can visualize that it's, you know, 1 1 flat 7 5 flat 3. And then 4 5 flat 7 3 or 4 5 flat 7 4 5 1 3 1 4 1 flat 5 5. So like, And your ear will be, you know, before you try and play it, and your ear will tell you where you made mistakes and where you went wrong and stuff. But most people don't spend time, they just don't spend enough time trying to develop that stuff. There's ear, I have ear training videos too, but enough about the videos. Any questions about the ear training? That we say kind of like the most important thing for last, but it's such a big topic.
Yeah.
It's harder to make specific steps on where to go from there. But any questions on the ear training?
Not really. Ear training is something that I did a lot of in school.
Yeah.
And I've been out of school for a couple of years.
And can you talk more about that? Like, how would you practice ear training in school? Like, what'd they have you do?
Interval practice. Just, we had to do dictation, and we had where they will play something on a piano to write out the rhythm and the notes. Usually given the key, so I'm not guessing at the key.
Okay.
Also, but, and then also, oral skills, so like, being able to sing in the interval with a starting pitch, so like do a descending tritone or, ascending third.
For those who are listening, descending tritone, let me see if I could even do it in the key of A would be, and then, because it's the flat five. So 8, 7, 6, 5, flat five. Like that.
Yeah.
So, good. So that's all useful. And so all those skills that you acquired during that, you haven't necessarily practiced putting it all together in an actual line. And how do you do that? Dissect each note in a line. There's only so many notes in a melodic line. Pick a simple one, you know, and decode it, and then play it in different keys.
Yeah.
So we did a ton today. I hope this was a good overview of basically all the different areas for improv.
Yeah.